You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so as it's a Thursday, it's the double-header Dream Team edition of the 5 o'clock shadow on strictlybusinesspodcast.com with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg and also Nick Kunzer, also in Johannesburg, and he's from Sanlam Private Wealth. Now, before we went on air, Nick, I sort of sensed tiredness or exasperation from you because of what's been going on. Last night was brutal, was it not, in the United States of America? It was horrible.
Yeah, evening, Lindsay, evening, David. Yeah, it's been a tiring week. It's, the sort of history books talk for themselves, you know, up until last week, Friday, you know, the Dow Jones last time it had a 7-day move like this was in the 1980s. Mm. S&P, the NASDAQ also breaking records for longest losing streak. And then also little thing like these swings, you know, after the Fed meeting, you know, up, you know, down whatever it was, 3% that day, up 3% the next day, you know, this is not normal swings. And we've said it on these typical moves are you see bear markets. I think we're starting to realize more that the risk is certainly pretty good side here. These rallies are running out of steam, and the downside is looking more and more evident. And VIX at 32 answers that question as well. But yes, to go back to your original question, it is quite tiring at the moment, unfortunately. Plus, to mention the fact I've got a lot of offshore clients, sitting on the blower last night till 10 o'clock, trading and coming in at 6. Looking forward to tomorrow night.
I'm sure you are. But just one other thing, you know, I sent you a message today when the S&P was relatively well behaved this morning, and then suddenly the futures were then down 1.2-1.3%. I sent you a message and said it's getting clobbered again. It's almost like there's been some margin call for a hedge fund or something like that, and you just said it's a bear market. Are you despondent,
it's a bear
Nick?
Market, yeah. No, I'm not despondent because, I mean, every time you look at a screen with gazillions of different prices, you know, I'm a trader at heart. There's always opportunities, whether you want to go short or when you want to go long. You want to trade the downside or trade the upside. You know, the market always gives you an opportunity to make money. That's something I have learned.
Yes.
I guess the trick is keeping the money, but that's a conversation for another day.
Yes.
But, you know, there's a lot of volatility, a lot of things that are happening. And for me, I'm a little bit nervous that the longer the market grinds lower, and we saw the results out of Target, we saw the results out of Walmart, and I'm concerned that now that we've realized inflation is a problem, inflation problem starts to become an earnings problem. And we're starting to see places like Walmart and Target, too. I certainly think it looks like they're unable to pass these higher inflation costs or margins onto the consumer, and they're going to take a knock too. So it just is one of those ones where it's very few places to hide, unfortunately.
David, how do you feel? You're an ultra bull. Maybe ultra is a little bit overstated, but you are always bullish. You're always optimistic, and you've always been right over the last 60 years or whatever it is since you've been 50 years since you've been in the business. But how do you feel now? Do you echo Nick's sentiments? I mean, I'm looking at the S&P now.
It's only
down 0.5%. It was down 1.4% earlier on today. What do you think?
It's tiring. It's what happens in markets like that is that everybody, we've been having a lot of warning signs out there. People have been very concerned for months about what was happening in markets. And we applauded the Fed last year as they got us out of the pandemic. And we didn't see any major crash. We didn't see the economy. And unfortunately, things turned very sharply. And now everyone's turning on the Fed. To be honest, I think the Fed that gave us guidance, and this is what I'm finding difficulty, the Fed that gave you guidance during the pandemic, how are we going to get out and where are we going? You know, the so-called dot plot, all of a sudden that doesn't exist anymore. There is no dot plot. What you're seeing is just pandemonium. And I think what's happened is the Fed has panicked and everybody is panicking with it because no one's quite sure whether they're in control. In my view, I think they've lost credibility. That's what the market's saying. When what we're seeing now is completely disorderly markets.
Yes.
And when that happens, do you know what I'm saying, Lindsay? When you see a disorderly market, that means that, hold on a sec, no one here is in control. No one knows what's going on. And I think that's what the tiring part of about it is. And if you listen to commentators, you're getting so many different opinions about what needs to be done. So I think people are being exhausted.
I think that just to,
Go, sorry, Nick.
I was going to say it is exhausting. And just to add to what you're saying, you know, we've come through the recent weeks of this sell-off where we are very aware about this inflation and interest rates. And we're at the start of it. We saw our South African Reserve Bank today raising rates to the biggest jump we've had in 6 years. So higher rates are coming. We have the inflation. But what as I said in my first comment, what concerns me now is we might also be getting threats to earnings and growth. We saw it with Target. We saw it with Walmart. And then late last night after the close, we had Cisco Systems. They also cut their full year earnings guidance too. So now it's like, it's just adding to this overall dour sentiment, I guess. You know, markets trade on sentiment right now. The only positive side thing I can say is that everything is so bearish right now, it might actually be to the point that it's a turning point.
Honestly,
I think you're absolutely right that people are too bearish.
I'm looking at the S&P now. Okay, it's still down 0.7%, and at one stage this morning it was actually slightly positive, but it was also down 1.4% at one stage, I think it was. But you can knock the Fed as much as you like, but financial services professionals like yourself have benefited from the Fed for so long, and you embrace the fact that they were flooding the market with money, and you embrace the fact that they were boosting the economy after the global financial crisis, and then suddenly, just because, as you call it, they're behind the curve, suddenly you're knocking them, David.
No, not at all. There they were in control. They told you what they were doing and where they were heading. All of a sudden, they don't know where they're heading. That's all. They told us exactly what was happening. We need full employment. We're going to keep things loose until that happens. You knew down the line what was happening. And at the moment, they're in total disarray. They're not quite sure where they're going. And that's the whole point. That's what orderly markets are about, and that's what one of the duties is to keep – I can't quote exactly what the mandate is, but it's generally you do not want markets like this. And what the issue is when we discuss Target and when we discuss Walmart, hold on a sec, they're saying the consumer's under pressure.
Yes.
Okay. The Fed's saying we will continue to raise rates until inflation comes down. So you're saying, hold on a sec, the evidence out there is that the consumer's under pressure. Well, that's what the market's saying with Target. So you're going to raise rates while the consumer is still under pressure. So that's where the confusion's coming. What is happening out there? No one knows. That's what I'm saying. No one's knowing.
And just to add in that the U.S. economy's GDP, about 60% or thereabouts, of the GDP of America is on consumer spending. So you can see how important this conversation actually is, and a balancing act the Federal Reserve has between, you know, raising rates too quickly and trying to balance it with tipping things over a little bit into recession. I think that is the concern.
I think what we need here is
the Fed really do have a tough job.
They do have a tough job, but on the other hand, they've had a very, very easy job for quite a while now, because they printed money, they flooded the money into a system, and the financial services industry has eaten it up with a spoon and done very well out of it. I think we need transparency and clarity, and I think that's what we're getting at the moment. And unfortunately, the clarity is unpalatable, David.
Do you know, Lindsay, you know what? Financial markets are not games. They're not a game.
No.
And this, we make it a game, and in a nice way. Financial markets are not about that. Most of the people out there, the vast majority of them, remember our the services that we follow have very, very limited viewership. But most people out there are working in shops, they're working on the roads, they're engineers. You know, from their point of view, their savings are very important.
Right.
And one has to ensure stability in their savings. You know, that's the whole point. You've got to ensure that their pension funds are well looked after, and they get a decent return. They don't know markets. They don't understand this. What I'm trying to say is that that's where you need orderly markets. You know, we come from time to time, you have these slumps. We had a real, we allowed conditions in 2007, 2008. We lost control there. It was absolutely craziness. We saw a massive, massive issue, a financial crash. We had it in 2020 when they closed the global economy. They closed the doors like Russia did. So, but what the point I'm trying to get at is that coming out of that, we needed to, you needed to kind of control this and make sure that things are steady. But the Fed has lost it. You know, you don't, his, it's his duty. It was their duty. And I blame to an extent government as well. You know, you, you must keep conditions understandable. And I don't see that at all. I'm not frustrated or angry. You know, I've been through this many times before.
Yeah. But you know, David, there's also, there's also a lot of politics involved. I mean, that whole sort of, that whole rhetoric from last year about this transitory inflation. Yeah. And you and I were sitting here making jokes about how the cost of, the cost of milk was up 20%, the cost of orange juice futures were 30%. And I mean, those are the facts. Everywhere you looked was just, and not to mention the fact that, you know, the headline numbers as oil smashed through $100 a barrel, and the Fed are still going, oh, it's transitory, it's transitory, it's transitory. And everyone was looking at them going, on what planet are you on? And therefore, credibility.
Nick, you and I weren't. I mean, Nick, to our credit, it was 15, 16 months ago. I think it was December 2021 or even just a couple of months before that, where you and I said, what is he talking about? I'm looking at my Commodity Research Bureau index here, and I'm seeing lumber, I'm seeing wheat, I'm seeing iron ore, I'm seeing lithium, and every other commodity going up. And you and I said he was wrong.
Yeah, and I started to dig a little deeper because I thought, am I missing a trick here? And I started to come across these like obscure things like egg futures that trade on the Dalian Exchange.
And cheese.
And I'd see like egg futures and cheese, they're up 30, 40%. I'm like, there's everywhere I looked, the cost of something that you put on your table had gone up 30 or 40%. So, look, I think there was a lot of politics. As I said, a lot of politics involved. They were hoping this was not going to go up and stay. But unfortunately, you know, the base effect is it's gone way up. And now they're having to tie in with exactly what David's saying. They lost credibility because now our biggest fears come true. They've had to sort of, they're behind the curve. And they're going to have to, and they've got this balancing act. And I have to say, self-inflicted, because they didn't react quick enough. They could have done 8, 10, 12 months ago. They didn't. They were hoping it was going to come down, and it hasn't. And now they're stuck there with overnight rates at 1.25% and inflation at 8.3%. Yeah. The gap is eye-watering.
It's outrageous.
And they've got to either do it. And I think to the point now, I don't think they really care if they knock the market a bit, because quite frankly, I think they have to. And, you know, as Lindsay said as well, and you've said, I mean, there's no dot plot, there's no forecast. They need to get aggressively get inflation under control. And, as we all said before, this is not good for risk assets. So surprise, surprise, the last couple of weeks, the market's been selling off. It's probably to be expected.
One of the things that I like about what happened today was that the South African Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Committee is the complete antithesis of the US Federal Reserve. In other words, it's been measured the whole time. It's a sober institution. They have done so well compared to other central banks. They've behaved themselves beautifully, David. Don't you agree?
I agree absolutely. And even when they come out, their whole statements are very clear. You know exactly where they're going, and you can see the Rand picked up and rates came down.
Yes.
The 10-year, I think, is now, what, 9? Sorry, I didn't see the – It has come down, 994.
994,
sorry, from 988.
That's the market voting in confidence.
And credit to them. And they tell you where rates are. They tell you where they think growth is going to be. What was interesting – what was interesting, and please comment on this.
Yes.
There's absolutely – no reference to the noise that we are seeing in the media coming out of international houses, all of that. They come out and they say, listen, we see global growth at, you know, we've reduced our global growth to 3.5% for this year, 2.7. So we're not talking about a recession. And then they say inflation next year, blah, blah, blah. and so on. So very clear in their thinking. And without reference, you know, not getting carried away with anything that's happening in the rest of the world. So they're seeing it, you know, from their point of view, whether they know what they're talking about or not, they're quite clear. You know, they're not saying, okay, don't go into a panic now. We don't see a global recession next year, which everybody is now calling for, you know, stagflation and so on. Well, they don't see it. So I was like, okay, fine. I'm happy with that.
You see, the thing is that it's almost as though you lock Nick Kunze and David Shapiro into a bunker and you slip a pizza under the door occasionally so that they can be fed. But they have no information about what's going on. They just see, as Nick always says, I trade what I see on the screen. The Reserve Bank, it almost says, this is the indicator. These are the indicators we look at, and we are on our own. We're not going to talk about what's happening in the Ukraine, etc. We are going to manage the South African monetary situation with a little bit of. Obviously, they have to have a little bit of a fiscal analysis as well. But the Reserve Bank is fantastic because it's totally independent, don't you think, Nick?
Yeah. Again, I just reiterate. I just think that they are such a class act. We always do. We switch over to the channels when he speaks in the afternoons, like today, and completely unemotional, tying in exactly what you and David said. Mm-hmm. Unemotional. These are the facts. But also, to be fair, you know, a bit of breathing room. You know, we've got our prime rate at 8.25% now. It was 7.75. So it's sitting at 8.25%. You know, CPI is 5.9.
Mm.
So you could argue that. As an emerging market, he's doing what he should do. He's ahead of the curve.
Yes, exactly. So,
and a lot of things, unfortunately, life's going to get expensive for South Africans, but a lot of things are out of our control. We import almost all of our inflation. We don't export too much except for, obviously, the commodities, which are dollar-based. So he has to be ahead of the curve. We cannot have a weakening economy, a weakening currency. And we cannot have a weakening currency with oil price at $110. So he has to be ahead of this curve. And that's exactly what he's done today. And guess what? The market rewarded him. David, you just said it. The bonds actually rallied. Foreign money went into it, and the rand went to 15.78. So to me, that's like, I don't care what other people think. I want to see what the market thinks, and they gave him 10 out of 10. Quite frankly, five stars for that result today. So now we're ahead of it. We've got a little bit of breathing room. You can probably, if inflation in America maybe is near its peak at 8.3, maybe next month's a little bit softer, then I think he's played an absolute blunder. And 50 basis points a lot. It's the biggest jump we've had in 6 years.
Yeah.
So it's a big move. And some people, the whisper numbers are talking about maybe a quarter, but he didn't flinch. Fiercely independent, wants to be ahead of what's happening with the developed markets. And with the Fed doing last time, he raised it a half. So yeah, don't need to say any more. Just look what we're seeing on the screen. You know, nice solid rand off the back of it.
Very good indeed.
I must say one thing, because I'm a great believer in the way that we're combating this and talking to clients is okay. You know, just taking the arguments, maybe finding an antidote for that, but also looking at corporate earnings. You know, wherever, I'm not saying globally, and seeing what companies say. But I must I like to keep a note of this, and I looked at Afrimat's results. And I looked at Afrimat's results with a view of saying, okay, what are they saying? You know, how? And I look at, as Lindsay, I always tell you, I go straight to the prospects.
Exactly, yes.
And what does he say? He says, we're well positioned to capitalize on strategic initiatives and future opportunities. Many exciting opportunities are being investigated. You know, not a reference to anything that's happening in the world. And I thought, okay, I like your boardroom. You know, this is great.
Mm.
And what the point being is that that's what I love about equity markets and about corporates, is that when they get into the boardroom, they don't go and say, you know what Goldman Sachs chairman said, or do you know what Goldman Sachs strategist said? They sit down and say, how are we going to make money? What's the iron ore price? You know, what's the anthracite price? Or is the government spending money on building and so on? And credit to them. Credit to corporates who just put their head down and you know, they might not trade what's in front of the screens, but they trade under the conditions in which they give them.
The one thing that's very interesting about the interest rate, I mean, Afrimat is a very good story, and you taught me that many years ago, David. Up. Don't read through the whole thing. Just go to what they think. What's their outlook statement? And it was a very interesting with 91's results yesterday. You can say, well, their assets under management have gone up by five billion quid and that sort of thing. But you go to the end of it and it says, yeah, times are going to be tough. The last quarter wasn't particularly good, and the future. So you can trade off as much as you like with the 5 billion coming in. But on the other hand, if you read the statement about the last quarter of their results and also what they think about the future, that's why the share price has been whacked. So David Shapiro, again, his wisdom comes forth. The other thing, just before we get on to South African corporate news today, is that in the United States, when an interest rate goes up or down, it affects a lot more people than it does in South Africa, because a lot of people in South Africa don't have any exposure to an interest rate rise or an interest rate fall because they don't have debt. I mean, you know what I'm saying. In America, of course, it does. Nick, don't you agree? The sensitivity of an interest rate rise or fall in America is completely different to the sensitivity in South Africa because of the nature of our economy.
Yeah, nature of our economy and also a nature of the makeup. I mean, something like America, when you've got 97%, whatever it is, or I don't know what the exact number is, full employment.
Yes.
Every single American who's employed, practically everyone of 350 million in America, you know, has a share portfolio, is invested in the market, probably has a mortgage, they all have houses. So very, very dependent on interest rate moves, absolutely. And also through sheer fact that it's the number one economy in the world, I mean, people grow up with a more capitalist sort of knowledge. I mean, most Americans are aware exactly what goes on. Whereas us in emerging markets, you know, in a developing country, you know, we've got horrific unemployment and not, you know, interest rate moves doesn't affect the average person here because they're not invested in the market. So, and that's, we all know the reasons why. But yes, America, obviously vastly dependent.
I must tell you a story.
Go on.
My daughter always tells me, she says, you know, in America, you have to build up a credit record. In other words, you have to build up debt. Otherwise, you can't get any other debt. If you want to get a house or a motor car or anything, get a loan, you have to have a debt record. You can't be a person who always pays off. Otherwise, because when they want to check your credit rating, they've got to check against the loans that you've had before. And if you haven't got that, they won't give you a loan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's irony. They actually encourage you to go out and borrow money and repay it and so on. And I've never been a person who liked that. I've never liked debt, you know, unless it was imperative in for houses or anything like that. But as you say, it's very much part of their makeup. I don't think there's anybody in America, any household, that hasn't got debt or somewhere on the line. In South Africa, it's interesting. There's always a joke about the person who, when the petrol price goes up and says, well, it doesn't affect me. You know, I go to the garage and I say, here's 400 Rand for my car. And no matter what the price is, I'm always putting in 400 Rand with. So it doesn't affect me. And it's the same thing, I think, to a large extent, with so many of our people, you know, so many, consumers here. They've got so much in their back pocket, and that's what they spend. If they get 3 carrots or 2 carrots, well, that's what it is.
What do you think about this one? I just want to ask Nick this one, because I've had this debate over a number of years. If the price of food goes up, if the price of petrol goes up, Nick, these items are inelastic when it comes to a household's demand. So you have to spend that amount of money. So let's say you're bringing in 100 Rand a month and the price of your fuel and food goes up from 40 Rand a month to 50 Rand a month. That withdraws money from the system. You can't spend it on other things. So in fact, although people say that, CPI inflation is going up because petrol is going up and food prices are going up, in fact, in the longer term, it withdraws money from the system and therefore reduces demand and therefore inflation's comes down. Nick, you're clever. You talk to clever people and you're clever yourself. What do you think about that argument? And everyone's always knocked me down on this one.
Mm-mm.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think it's the same argument. Like, what's the solution to a high oil price? It's a high oil price. People stop consuming oil and it comes down. I think it's exactly the same rate. And that's why I'm watching quite closely all these inflation prints, 9% in the UK on Monday, 8.3 in America last week. You know, at some point you get to, you know, at some point it's peak inflation. You tidy up. There's less to spend, less going in the system, and inflation does subside. So I'm on your side of this one, Lindsay.
Very good.
I think you buy less.
Exactly.
I think people spend the same amount of money. Sorry, there's a slight difference. They just, that's what I'm saying. They cut down. And that was evident last year when we went into ShopRite's numbers and everything. There were lower volumes. In other words, people eat less.
And Pep was the other one.
Lower volumes.
Yeah.
So you go, that's what I'm saying. You'll go in with 500, you'll still spend 500 Rand, but you're going to get less for it. So the companies themselves take the knock in terms of lower volumes. But I think people will still spend, you know, still spend the same money. I know it's exactly what you're saying in a different way, but I don't think they spend more. They don't say, okay, I'm going to spend 600 on petrol and therefore only 400 on food. I think they spend 500, you know, as it was. So anyway.
Okay, let's have a look at the...
I'm not the analyst. We'll see that when it comes through.
Okay.
When it comes to the results.
Yes, we will in 3 months' time. Let's have a look now at three companies that came out with announcements on the Stock Exchange new service of the JSE Securities Exchange. Netcare came out late. You probably haven't had a chance to look at their voluntary trading update, but Massmart and Investec, Nick. Massmart and Investec. Massmart had a trading update for 19 weeks. I don't know why they do that, but anyway, it's useful.
It's probably the AGM. It's probably at the annual general meeting that they do it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. What's 19 weeks in months?
Who knows?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, but
Nick,
have a look at Investec, if you would, because it was sharply down earlier on, and obviously the market recovered, so it recovered with the market. What do you make of Investec? Because David and I have spoken about this before. I can't quite work out Investec at the moment. Nick, what do you think?
We have quite a few clients who are interested in it. We had some guys buying it yesterday. I had some guys buying it today. You know, I think on general, a lot of people think that it is undervalued. Mm. You know, it's considering where it's come from, where it's trading, and given what the other offshore financials have done, it certainly seems to be a little bit unfair what it's done. But saying that, like the earnings this morning, it was quite a knee jerk. I don't know if you saw it. I mean, the stock dropped like 4% on the open straight away,
exactly.
And then spent the rest of the day sort of bouncing back. So. I think I'm neutral on this, but you know, it's on quite a cheap P. Historically, it's trading at 11. I mean, it used to trade on 14s and 15. So historically, it's quite cheap. Its dividend yield's over 4%. You're going to get I'm okay with this one. I'd be a buyer of this share. I think the markets for some reason is unfairly sort of punishing it. I don't know why.
You know what's interesting? They publish their results and. They do a Rand one for Investec Limited.
PLCs.
And then they do one for PLC. When I looked at the PLC's numbers, because I went through them, not in great detail, but, you know, most of their money is still made in South Africa. You know, 56.5% is still South Africa. So it's only 43.5% that comes out of the UK. And cost to income ratio is much lower here than there. So that's an expensive operation. The idea when they went over there, the whole idea was to diversify and stop relying on South Africa and to build that up into a big company. And at that stage, I think it was split at originally 50-50, and it was hoped that UK would get a lot. No, they still rely heavily on South Africa for the numbers here.
What was that story, David, that you told me many, many years ago? And you said you remember when Investec was a nascent business. You know, it was forging its way and trying to make its way into the South African banking system. And you said it was, you know, it was almost like a not a family business, but a colloquial business where it was dentists and doctors.
They had a brilliant business. What they did, and credit to Ian Cantor.
Yes.
What he did is that he targeted professionals, accountants, doctors, dentists, who needed offices, who needed equipment, who needed loans, because traditionally they haven't got collateral. You know, they're not a business there. So, but he identified them as these are people who are going to earn money. Because they're professionals, they will pay back. And what he did is he built up his whole base was professionals.
Yeah.
And, you know, earners, people who earn money. And, of course, later on, as they built up their business, lent them money for their houses and so on. So that was the source of Investec wealth. And really, you know, super business plan. So you go to anybody in Johannesburg where they started and probably down to Cape Town, every person, every professional would have an account at every doctor, lawyer, you name them, would have an account at Investec. And it's still to this day, I think it remains that, you know, that is the focus of their business.
And not just the Jewish community, David, because obviously it has a very strong Jewish foundation to it. But it wasn't just the Jewish community.
It started off with a lot of the Jewish community, but they spread that, you know, over time. And they had innovative products. They were very good. I still think today they have the best credit card around. The quality of service I don't find anybody that can match them. When you need something and you're in trouble, when I'm trouble, you know, you lose a card or something like that. I still think they give excellent service in that. But that's how they built it up. Very, very smart. And that, you know, I think it's been hard to break away from that. That's the problem. You know, if you look at the Capitecs now, which is the other extreme, and the growth in Capitec, they're not in that market. You know, and I think they also hit a lot of issues. They closed down Australia. They tried America. They tried Israel. You know, they tried to expand into those. Some of those were just absolutely disastrous. And I think that Titi has taken over from Stephen Kosoff. And I think much steadier business is emerging out of that. Yeah, but they're okay. They're all right, you know. But I don't know where they're going to grow. I don't know where the growth is going to come in this economy.
I tell you one thing, Nick. I mean, David's been waxing lyrical about the origins of Investec. But one thing I will say is that they're a very, very personable company. And some people will put me down by saying this, but I, and David, you'll understand this, and Nick as well. Because they sponsored Spurs, Tottenham Hotspurs, I just happened to casually mention that I was going to London. They said, would you like tickets to the game? And I remember going to see Tottenham against Stoke City. Dreadful game, 0-0. But they also, they gave me tickets to, the Ashes test. Horse racing doesn't interest me too much, but, they gave me tickets to the Melbourne Ashes test match where there were 99,000 people there. And I just thought, you know, you don't need to do that. I'm just a hack. I'm a minor broadcaster, but they made the effort to give me these tickets and source these tickets from the English Cricket Board. And I thought that sort of distinguishes you a little bit. And although you've been accused of being a little bit rapacious in the past, they were very, very personal. And I really
love
them.
I have to laugh.
Go on.
No, I have to laugh because I think this is mainly Bernard. Bernard Kenter, you know, he was managing director of UK, and I think he wanted to push the name, you know, and they had a certain aggression about how they did that. And this is British society, and I always laughed, I always used to joke because, you know, they sponsored, I think it was Ascot or one of the derbies there.
Yes, the derby, of course they did, yeah.
And Epsom, I think, derby. Epsom derby, and I think Bernard got to ride in the carriage with the Queen or something like that. And I can't remember what the
top hat.
I don't know. There was something, or even behind her or something, you know, in his top hat and morning suit. But I always laugh. I said, if it was Investec, I'm sure that they would have insisted that they put the zebra on the side of the Queen's carriage. And remember, they tried that. They went all out, you know, with Twickenham as well to sponsor rugby, to sponsor Spurs, to get their name out there.
Quite right.
The Brits are something else as well, you know.
Of course we are.
Yeah.
So. Nick, you've been very quiet. Have you been soaking it all up?
No, listen. Yeah, and I'm just, you know, it's just the perception of Investec. They've certainly punched way above their weight. I mean, you look at something like, you know, the first springs to mind, something like JP Morgan. You know, JP Morgan's got 270,000-odd people. Investec's got 6, you know, just to put that in perspective. Oh. And yet, where you turn your screens on, you look at Twickenham, there's Investec there. You know, I think they've really built a perception that they're a lot bigger than they are. And David alluded to it. You know, a lot of their income is still derived from South Africa. And the question is, where do they go from here? Because they've spent years trying
Nick,
to get bigger,
know.
And they can't.
The UK
and that
is
space
hard.
In the UK, it's a very
hard. It's very hard. And there's a lot
and banks that go back centuries.
That's
centuries
the point.
And centuries.
That's the point. I think my daughter worked for Discovery and for many years, and they're trying their hardest. And I know that she started originally when they went into Boston. This is 18-odd or maybe even longer than that, when they tried to do something there, you know, which they then changed and you know, shifted to Vitality. And it was so hard to break into the tradition. You know, Boston is the northeast of the United States. It's tradition. You know, it's a very, very there's an established elite there. And to break into that elite is so difficult. And here you've got this little firm coming from South Africa, you know, Discovery, as clever as they are, going to teach the to teach the establishment how to do insurance. So I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's very, very. It's like us going down to Cape Town. You know, if I had to say, I'm going to knock the Cape Town market, you know, I'm going down. Forget about it. You know, they don't like outsiders. They don't like you coming in and trying to break into their territory.
Quite right.
I got Nick Kunze. Some of them have got Nick Kunze here, but I mean,
of course they have. Employee of the year or something. He won an award and well deserved as well.
He anyway. Wouldn't do it. That's why he's up in Joburg. If he went down to Cape Town, actually he's got his Harvey mates there. He'd be fine.
Put out the old school time.
Let's have a look at some spot prices now, because the dollar rand is 15.84. The British pound against the rand is 19.82. The euro rand is 16.79. Euro dollar, this is interesting, just pushing 106 at the moment, which is a 1.85% fall in the last 24 hours for the US dollar. The cable, British pound against the US dollar, is 125.10. So the dollar on a little bit of a retreat, but that's understandable. The gold price, because of the weakness in the US dollar, has rallied by $30 to 18.49. Platinum has barely changed. It's up $4 or so to 9.51. And palladium is 1962, which is down $37 an ounce. Now, the oil price has been remarkably quiet, actually, over the last couple of weeks. I've got
same price.
Yeah, exactly. It's $110.10 for Brent crude, which is up 0.9%. And West Texas crude is $110.04 per barrel, which is up 0.33%. So we've got parity on those things. And I really want to get an oil trade on. I need to track one down, but they're so secretive, I can never find one. The natural gas price is 8.465 now, which is up 1.2%. What else have we got here? The US 10-year, which we've been talking about, 2.83%.
Look at that.
Yeah, exactly. Safe haven
that's
buying.
That's come from
3.2,
almost 3.10, 3.08 it was, or somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the intraday high was actually 3.205%. It's imprinted, it's embedded in my mind. The South African 10-year, as you say, David, from 9.94 when the speech started this afternoon from the Reserve Bank, down to 9.88. People applauding the progressive and measured way that the South African Reserve Bank goes about its business. Bitcoin, suddenly, it was below 29,000 at the beginning of this conversation. It's now up 4% to 30,413. And talking about up and down, Nick will give us the figures later on from the United States. But anyway, S&P futures only down 0.4% now. So their losses are two-thirds less than they were earlier on today. Shall we have a look at some of the movers on the JSE? Because it closed well off its lows. This morning, when I did my morning report, there were only I normally have five major moves on the upside and the downside, but there were only three on the upside because the market was really on its knees. But it's recovered quite nicely. Harmony is up 2 2/3%. Anglo Gold Ashanti up 2.5%. Clicks up 2.25%. HCR 2%. And Goldfields up 1.3%. On the downside, Karoo down 6.6%. Textainer, a perennial up or downer, down 5%. 91 Limited, down 4.4%. AB InBev has shed 4.3%. And Old Mutual down 3.9%. Nick, outside of those, what have you seen?
Well, I think the Rand had a big play today in some of these moves, but food inflation, and more food inflation. Top of my leaderboard on the small caps is Rhodes Food Group, up 7.16%.
Nice.
Astral Foods up 3.5%.
Nick,
as
they
well.
Were not 20% yesterday.
Yeah, they were on very thin trade.
Was it?
I know, but that's this market for you. But just bouncing back a little bit of that, and then AB InBev. It's just been. I was hoping for a bit of a safe haven, somewhere to park your cash. I thought AB InBev would look like that, but certainly it's had a terrible few weeks trading actually, and I thought the results were quite good. But yeah, as I said, I think the Rand has been played a big part. It was quite a bit negative this morning, and now it's firmer. But I mean, those are. That's pretty much it, guys.
Okay. In that case, give us the closing JSE indices plus Live Wall Street and value traded, if you would please, Nick.
Yeah, so as you said, Lindsay, well off the lows, thank goodness. We were down at 67, under 67,600. We closed at 68,117, so we made back 500 points.
Nice.
But nevertheless, we still closed down 1.21%, so it was a bit of a tough day. 68,245. Top 40 tradable index down 1.25% as well, 768 points, 61,725. Your closing level. Only one in the green, that is academic and educational services. So there's the schooling groups up 0.25%. In general, soggy day. Tech down 0.5%, healthcare 1.3%, financials down 1.92%, which was surprising given the strength in the Rand in the last hour. Energy down 2.25%, industrials down 2.48%, and the biggest lagger was consumer non-cyclicals down 2.91%. Value traded, average the last few days, 24.6 billion value traded. And Wall Street today, we have a bounce back. Only down 0.25%. We're about to go unchanged on the S&P, 3912. That's only down 11 points.
I've got it up here.
Yep. So that is the front month. Yeah, you're right. So this is we're gonna finish positive today.
I think
NASDAQ
so.
Is only down 0.5% now. You are right, David. The NASDAQ is down, is actually up 0.48%, and it was negative. It's about to break through 12,000 level. So yeah, it looks like we might be a turnaround Thursday.
I think so.
Yeah.
No, it will be. It's so oversold, and the sellers are so exhausted. I reckon so. S&P futures down 0.25%. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. David Shapiro is from Sasum Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.